What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms.
The live button is...
There we go. Welcome, everybody, in to See Ball, Get Ball. We got a cool episode today. We'll catch up with Pete Thamel at the end and talk all things college football. Pete's a stud. He was one of the most interesting characters I was around with game day, and just like his job and what he was asked to do on a consistent level. Like Brent Rollins joins me every week. I'm David Pollack. He's just asked to do a lot and sacrifice a lot, and that phone is glued to him. And I caught up with him earlier because you were busy. But I really, my number one question that I did not ask him that I really regret is I wanted to know how many hours is his screen time a day? Because I bet it's absolutely ridiculous. I'm going to text him right now while you talk to see if I can get an answer to that question.
Okay. I did get a chance to listen to the interview. And one of the just sort of couple cool things to me were, and first off, one of these days, my day job will not be in the way of me joining on all these things. But, he's a Syracuse alum. I didn't realize that. Like
everyone in the medium is a Syracuse alum, by the way.
The journalism,
that and you'll be good.
Like the famous alumni, like Tirico, Costas, like all these big time sports journalist guys come out of Syracuse. I thought it was funny how he put the NCAA, but we'll get into that and some other things that he talked about, and really his most intriguing story for this college football season, we're going to kind of get into here in a little bit, is the same thing that I actually had written down for what we're going to talk about tonight. But first off, you had a tweet from Brett McMurphy yesterday evening, that the conference commissioners have decided to, quote, start over on determining the 2026 college football playoff format because of the disagreement, in a way, per se. This is basically an more at large versus more automatic qualifier issue. And there's going to be a lot of fisticuffs and fighting over that. And especially with the two big conferences that run that world.
I'm about to say, it's not,
what do you think it ultimately is?
It's start over because we're going to start over again and again. Because if I'm the SEC and the Big Ten, I have zero reason to make a deal. I'm not going to acquiesce to anything you want because I'm going to get everything I want next year. You know what I'm saying? Like, Brent, I mean, they have, it's like owning a stock. And it's like, you know what? Like, right now, I'm a 25% shareholder of the stock, and you're 25, and you're 25, and you're 25. I think we should sell it now. Like, But next year I'm going to be a 50% owner. What are you going to do? You're going to hold the stock and sell it for 50%. So I just don't think they're going to come to some agreement while the powers are not equally divvied up right now, because I think it's going to change.
By the way, that's a lot of words for stuff that's literally been going back and forth for months.
Yeah,
not to hate on the tweet, but
still. All of that to say nothing. I mean, deadline for finalizing is December. Okay, great. Awesome.
Okay, so our viewer here, Mr. William McBroom, great comment. Why not actually listen to the fans for once and not add more teams to devalue the regular season even more? So I had a thought today, and I want to see if you are in on this thought and if you want to join it. So for those that don't know, my day job, I'm in academia. The PhD in my Twitter account is actually real. I am a not real doctor kind of doctor. Continuously made fun of by many, including my spouse.
Your wife more than anybody. She says, just make sure everybody knows you're not a real doctor.
Not a real doctor. Continue. So, but in my world, I do research. And I thought, let's do some research on this. I need to put together a survey and we'll tweet it out and like a Google form kind of thing. And anyone and everyone with a Gmail address can fill out the survey and say, hey, what do you as a fan want? And then let it run for a while and go through the results. Yeah. What do you think? Sound good? Sounds like you would want to see?
Well, it's just like anything else. It's always interesting to me that when we all have comments, because everybody's got everybody's got an opinion on everything, NIL, all this stuff. But very few people have an opinion to actually make it better or to solve it. Very few people have solutions. So I think we all talk about it like a lot, like this is a problem, this is a problem. Like, and that's why I always want, you know, I want to be the people that answer those questions. That's our job. Like our job is to give you solutions, and that's what we're trying to do consistently. So I think it'd be good. I don't know how many good ones we'd have.
Give you options. Hey, would you want 12, 14, or 16? Because it's not going less than 12. That's for sure.
Yeah. I can't imagine why at this point, just most people aren't going to go ahead and say 16. I mean, I think that would be the overwhelming favorite because it's more access, and more access means more teams. And so I think it's good for your team to have more access to something. So I think that would be the consensus. Now, a couple of years ago, to go to four from two was not everybody was on board. And I'll be honest, I didn't love it. I love college football and I'll embrace whatever comes. But I think change is hard, just like with NIL, just like with all this stuff. Whenever you change something that I love, that I follow, that is so awesome, it takes me a second to get used to it. Now some people handle change better than others. I don't love change. So the system was so fun. And so I thought it was so great because I covered it for so many years. I didn't want to change it. But now I like more, and I would be on favor for 16, because last year I think you had a gripe that there was a few more teams that were really good. Now, I don't know that every year is going to be like that. Not every year is going to have, you know, 14 competitive teams. Sometimes we might have seven and we're like, we could cut this off at seven, but I'd rather have the extra.
Well, change happens. Wipe and move on. speaking of that, before we get to Tham, we're going to look at the college football playoff teams from a year ago and the biggest question that surrounds or that you look at from a football or even maybe not necessarily football specific question.
So are you saying you get one question, like the most important pressing need?
Yep. Okay. Biggest thing that to me that you have to answer. And like for me, like some of them, it's like D-line, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, we start with the champs. Ohio State, what is the biggest question for you heading into this season for the Buckeyes?
Well, I think most people are going to lean into quarterback, but I don't, because I know what Ohio State is in the quarterback room always. Like, it's just always consistency. I know it's great coaching, so I don't doubt the Ohio State offense. I think to me it's the defense. You got a new DC. You got a ton of new players. Like, what does this defense look more like it did a couple years ago when it was the big time deficiency of the team before they won the national championship? Or does it look like somewhere in the middle or closer to last year? But I mean, I could go down the list of so many names with JTT and Sawyer and all these guys. Just so many guys that had been there, done that, stayed for this and had experience that I trusted in that moment. So that's what I would say.
Mine is coaching. And it's both sides of the football. You have brand new coach and needless, like Matt Patricia is that's one where not many love that potentially. So we'll see. But him as a defensive coach, who knows? We'll see versus head coach. Lions fans, very much not a fan of him as head coach. So yeah, we actually went both different ways, and I didn't think QB either. Now, the only thing, if you're going QB, I would say QB under pressure, big game. Like, and you can't see that until that you get to those points. I mean, you're going to see it in week 1.
Yeah, week 1.
But certain points in their schedule, other points, they're going to put up ridiculous numbers and beat people by 30 and score 50 points.
It's tough to call plays, and you go, all right, throw it to 4.
Yeah.
Just here's the play. Gun right, shift, you know, 4 verts, throw it to 4. Yep. Thank you.
Yep. Throw it to 4. When in doubt. Notre Dame. Second team. I'll go first on this one since you went first on Ohio State.
All right.
Their schedule. They actually have to go play places at some teams this year when, like, you look at last year, they had the opener against A&M, but that's the first game. Like, you're sort of as prepared for that. You're healthy, that kind of thing, for the most part. They went and played at Georgia Tech in Atlanta, and Georgia Tech didn't have their QB. They went and played at USC. USC was playing a new QB, in essence. So that, like, they had minimal road schedule. Whereas this year, at Arkansas, at Miami week one, at BC, which is never, like, truly an easy game, at Pitt, and then they get USC, A&M, and Boise at home. So their schedule for me is the big question that I have. Can they navigate a consistently an opponent that can potentially beat you type schedule? Because they didn't have to at all last year. And they even got beat by one of the teams that they shouldn't have, and that's Northern Illinois.
NIU, yeah. That wasn't pretty. But besides that, they were a really consistent team. I think both sides of the line of scrimmage, I trust. Al Golden being gone is a big question mark that I think you could put on that list, because I thought he was one of the best DCs in college football, which is a big deal. I think to me, though, it's quarterback. Like, we can talk about all the different things. Like, you're not replacing Brent experience. You're not replacing a QB. You're replacing the heartbeat of your squad. Like, he was everything of your – you watched the national championship game, first drive, dude had like 11 carries and puking on the sidelines to go get in the house. Like, he just – he was the heartbeat. He was the short yardage guy. He made Love better. He wasn't the greatest passer in the world, but that's exactly what they were and who they were. And, you know, to me, I know Riley Leonard is not an NFL starting QB probably, but that dude is a college warrior. Replacing him is not going to be easy.
Yeah, and you got game one at Miami. So, next, Texas, Longhorns. By the way, we went through our award show the other day, Monday, and mentioned a lot of Texas players, like Colin Simmons and Anthony Hill.
Arch Manning.
Among others, Arch Manning, Taff, like, among others. Like, so what's the question mark, you think?
Well, I don't have any question marks about their defense. I think their defense is going to be elite. I think Arch has a chance to be good. I don't think the weapons are what they were and what they've had at Texas, but it's the offensive line. Like, the offensive line, almost everybody gone. You know, your two stalwarts at tackle who were both absolute studs and stallions. And so I think, you know, they were able to do a lot and have a lot of success, even with quarterback play that was kind of iffy, because they weren't great at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, no, held them back
last
some.
Year. But I think the offensive line allowed them to run the football and make the game easy. So I think, to me, it was clearly if and again, I'm doing this with you at the same time, which is fantastic. It's so much fun. But I'm saying the offensive line for Texas.
Yep, O-line, exactly what I wrote down, especially because the two bookend tackles that you lose, the center that was, you know, 3 or 4 year starter that you lost, there's one. All right, Penn State.
We are Penn State. Ty Warren, he gone. I mean, God, I Colton Ecky upgraded DC with Knowles. Offensive line's going to be better, more experienced. I think it's Ty Warren slash weapons. Are they good enough on the perimeter? Because I think the defense is going to be really good, really solid. QB is a 3 year starter, running backs obviously studly. I think I'll go the weapons on offense. Can they be proven in the passing game and win on the outside to create space to run more? I don't think that's where you went. I'm pretty positive I know where you went after being around you this long.
Oh, okay. Let's see.
James Franklin.
James Franklin
in big games is always a question mark for you.
So here's the under one umbrella. I'll read you what I wrote. Big games, can't get over the hump, mental slash pressure. Like, all the things, this is supposed to be their year. They probably know that as much as.
Handling the big stage and being the guys
and like expectations and getting over the hump, the Ohio State hump, like all that kind of stuff.
Spoiler alert.
Big games.
Penn State is, it might be Pete Thamel might talk about them in a positive light coming up in the interview we did with him. So that will add more fuel to that fire that Brent's talking about. But no, I mean, in a new spot for sure. But I do feel like, man, Penn State's been knocking on this door, brother. Like, it ain't like this is the first time they came to the house. Like, they've been to the crib before. They've knocked on the door. I mean, they haven't been invited in, But last year they got invited in and they had a cup of coffee and dadgum almost went to the national championship game. So let's not forget, like, a lot of times this stuff works in progressions. And Penn State slowly getting better, got to the playoff, got their feet wet. Now they get to bring guys back. They got the best 1-2 OC-DC punch probably in college football, period. And so I think Penn State's ready for this.
So the bouncer's been letting them in the club and they've been hanging out in the club. They haven't gotten to hang out in the VIP lounge.
Yeah.
Basically, is what you're saying.
It's okay, but hey, it's coming though. It's coming.
Oh, goodness gracious. All right, next. And that's a great pick. But James Franklin in that picture, rocking the bald head, and
looks like he's about ready to beat somebody's ace.
Dialed in. Next up, Georgia.
Oof.
God. I'll go first with this one.
There's so many you could go with Georgia, honestly.
I mean, there's a lot of unknowns, but I still think if we talked about this from an offensive standpoint. I think they could maybe not be as talented a quarterback, but get better quarterback play, and their offense and the weapons around the quarterback be better. I think it's the defensive line. Who becomes a true difference maker in the defensive line? Because that, to me, is the difference between 21 and 22 and what you've seen from Georgia the last few years is you didn't have, especially on the interior, a singular presence that can affect first and second down, especially when teams try to pass against them. Who steps up? Is it Elijah Griffin, the true freshman? Does Jordan Hall come back? Does Christian Miller become more than just a great run defender? Those kind of questions. Xavier McLeod, does he take a big leap? Somebody, especially along the interior defensive line, I think that's where, to me, the biggest question is.
Bro, let me tell you, I told y'all a couple weeks ago that I met Elijah Griffin. And, I mean, that ain't no freshman. I don't give a dang. That's not a freshman. Like, that's a grown man. That's a gam. That's a grown Irish man. Like, I mean, that dude, like, I was like this and shook his hand. And it was like, yeah, like way up here. Yeah, like that dude is unbelievable. I mean, he's just a big, good-looking human being. Yes, sir. Like very, very well spoken. It'll be interesting to see, but I think defensive line is probably the biggest issue. But I would just say I would steal and go lines of scrimmage because offensive line wasn't that much better for Georgia a year ago. It was a big struggle.
Inconsistent.
It was super inconsistent running the football. Period. So both lines of scrimmage, which is a staple of Kirby Smart and physicality and toughness, they kind of lacked that a year ago in that department. So I'm really interested to see if that really comes back.
Arizona State, I have one, and that is just that the Big 12 might be kind of wacky and different. I actually don't really have a lot of – they're really a veteran team, and – I like everything about their team, even transfer running back that come in, like Jordan Tyson, Levitt, we've already talked about and kind of gushed on.
Yeah.
I just – the Big 12 sometimes is just nuts. And that, to me, is the biggest question is, does kind of become par for the course or does it get wacky in the Big 12?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing when you turn all the lights on in your house how the light really works. I mean, I just realized that I didn't have a light on. And it's like, man, it's really dark. It's hard to see you. And then you're like, oh, hey, idiot, there's a set of lights that you didn't turn on. But you can't fix stupid here on See Ball, Get Ball. Arizona State.
A long day for you. It's been a long day.
Yeah. Arizona State, I think that, I mean, do you naturally go their engine that's gone at the running back spot? And do they have that running back? Because Cam Scataboo wasn't just a guy. He was a dude. And
part of the team, like you talked about with Leonard.
Heartbeat, physicality, toughness. And I'm going to pat ourselves on the back, Brent. Like, we were talking about him week two last year, like week three, week four. And then everybody's looked up and was like, oh, Arizona State's really, really good. And we're like, yeah, like, watch these fuckers. Like, they're really good. I mean, everything back. We talked about the OC in place. We talked about the QB in place. The Big 12 being the conference that it is, I think it allows them to continue to develop and grow and find weapons outside of Tyson. But I'd say the running back spot, does the running game get going or did Scataboo make that thing go?
Yeah. Was he the engine? All right. Next up, Oregon.
The Ducks. I mean, I don't
I'll give you mine.
Okay, go ahead.
how quickly can, I think it's DeCorion, something like that, Moore, the five-star ranked fifth overall in the Rivals recruiting rankings wide receiver, how quickly can he become a dude? Especially now with Evan Stewart's injury.
I'm about to say Evan Stewart injury. So what about the guy throwing the football? You just,
I actually kind of, like you mentioned it the other day when we talked about potential Heisman. You feel so confident in the system and the talent and what they've been doing that a quarterback is almost plug and play kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the quarterback needs dudes. So to me, that's, it's more about how quickly can that guy become a big time player for them. And he showed some flashes in the spring game. I saw.
Yeah. I think that, but I feel like Oregon's going to have dudes regardless. Like they've been recruiting dudes at a high level. You know, what I think we'll find out about the quarterback spot is how ready are you for the moment, you know? And obviously having a guy that has experience he's not starting over. Like he's played some football. You know, I just think it's the quarterback spot. Yes, Bo Nix, Dillon Gabriel, obviously we're dudes, but you know, it's more now, right? Like how much, yep. I mean, how ready are you for this moment and how prepared are you? And then the big games and then these, I think it to me, Oregon's going to go if their quarterback is elite, then they're going to be really, really good. But I also think the quarterback at that position has been so good. There's also kind of a standard to live up to as well. But we'll see how he does, man. I do think it's going to be tough though.
All right. Boise State, the Broncos.
I mean,
yes, that I think that one's probably the easiest one. Yeah. They lost an all-timer of a running back. But also, like for me, the schedule is one that's interesting because last year they only had the one loss at Oregon and they played really well. This year, game one, they got to go to South Florida. That's not a just layup. And granted, their team is a very veteran team, QB's back, that sort of thing. But you lose that, and you can still get in the college football playoff because of being the highest-ranked G5 team. But in terms of having that higher seed and being up there in the rankings like they were last year, no, I don't think – I think you have very little room for error for that versus being the true, like, 12 seed.
Yeah. And can Boise stay up there? And because, listen, they played some good games last year. Like, it wasn't like – I mean, UNLV, you remember, was pretty solid. Like that was pretty good. They played them twice. Remember? Like,
yep.
And both games were competitive. Were very, yep, very competitive. So
and they get losing, them at home, losing, I think this year.
Losing that dude at the tailback spot, like with the offense. Now listen, I love Mad Dog. And I think the offensive line with experience. And I think with that QB, like, I mean, he's good. I think he's got a lot. He's got a lot of those intrinsic qualities that you really want in a leader. Like you don't have any doubts about where he'll get them, but I think having a guy you could hand the ball off to 20 times a game and go 50 plus a lot of those times, like, and make big plays, it's to me that's pretty obvious. But it's the running back replacement, and can he be a guy?
Different animal. Very true. Tennessee, can any wide receiver step up and be a guy? They need somebody. In terms of the QB issue, I think it might be addition by subtraction, but it's still one where
– You think it's addition by subtraction?
Possibly.
Possibly. I mean,
we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean –
The coach bet on it, by the way. The coach said so, in essence.
Yeah, I mean, the whole situation, obviously, you know, it was an interesting situation. It's not like anything we've ever seen in the history of college football, which is saying something. Like, it's been around for a long time, and – the way it unfolded and holding out and, you know, basically get told you're bye-bye and hit the road. And now you're bringing it. But here's the thing, man. I don't think the system is overly complex, but I do think it helps being in the system for a while. Like, yes. I don't think that's easy to step into a new system and just all of a sudden you're going to be elite. It's just not as easy to do as you would think. But I think it's, to me, it's the offense. Like, it's the offense as a whole, because it's the running game. It's receivers because your best player last year was Dillon Sampson, and it wasn't close. Like,
right,
that dude was an animal. And I would argue you didn't push many people around. You didn't make a lot of plays in the receiving game. So the offense has got to grow and get better. I still think this defense is going to be pretty dang good.
Like, solid. Yes,
I agree. It's going to be top five in the SEC. I mean, they're they're really good across the board. And that defensive line still has plenty of guys that were rotating last year in these hockey waves that were really, really good players.
Let's see. Indiana, mine was offensive line. 60% of their offensive line, three of their five are transfers, which, yes, they could be great players, but or be very solid for them. But, yes, they're also new. It helps having Mendoza there. I think their defense is going to be solid again. Their best defensive players are back. That was me, offensive line for that, for me.
Yeah. I would say, too, I don't think Indiana is surprising anybody this year. Like, I think – you know, they're definitely, they've got the attention of everybody. It was like, oh, this is a cute little story, man. You see this team over here? Like, hey, it's not even basketball season, and Indiana looks pretty solid, you know? So I think that was, they kind of snuck up on some people, which was good, but the dominance was incredible. And I think, too, like, can you rebuild classes every year? And, you know, he had the great opportunity to do it through JMU with all of his transfers and all the people he knew. So now, you know, it's going to be different now. Now you're recruiting some of your own guys, and now they're still doing the transfer portal thing. It's still going to be a big part of it. But Cignetti, year two, I think offensive line, I'm right there with you. But I would say, you know, expectations, handling those, and, you know, taking a next step. We've seen programs have spikes and be very successful. But most of the time, the blue bloods usually run it and it comes back down to earth. Can Indiana sustain and keep that power and replace and do another year like they did last year?
One of the eyes are making the playoff. It's just Indiana, Illinois, or Iowa. So I think SMU, by the way, I think that was the picture there with the sold out. Was that the Nebraska game that they absolutely destroyed them?
Hammered Nebraska. I think.
Yeah.
Like, frying,
I think that's one of the that day because it was a noon game, kind of big noon, that sort of stuff. So
that USA flag on the field, that silhouette is pretty dope.
Yes, I agree. But yeah, all right, SMU.
Okay, SMU. I think with SMU, you got the quarterback situation taken care of. Having Maryland back is big. I think that opens up this passing game because now you got a tight end that can really stretch the field. So it's not offensively. That D-line, though, was dirty. The D-line, I don't think people understood, like, a bunch of transfers and a bunch of guys that they got to the quarterback, man. At one of the best rates in all of college football. Got tackles for a loss, like, really, really hyperactive. Now they got to replace a bunch of those guys on that defensive line. And that group's going to be, obviously, you know, you got to get stops. And I think they were good because they got people behind the chains. And then they use their tempo a lot of times and create explosive plays. And can you do that this year?
I agree. That's exactly what I wrote down, D-line. All right, last one, hashtag all in. Clemson, your biggest question for you who have lauded the Tigers, because I actually have one that I think is a very big question. Two really, but one primary.
Well, I know what you're going to say. Because if I objectively look at my team this year, all in, still got Clemson all the way at the top. I think there's – defensive line is really, really good. I think your second. First of all, I think your DC makes you better right now. Experience in the secondary, so you can't knock that. I don't think there's anything there you can knock. If you're going to go to the other side of the football, the offensive line is always a knock, like always for Clemson. Like when they won championships, people were like, their offensive line doesn't push people around.
Nobody got drafted.
Yeah, nobody's getting drafted, but the receivers were good and their quarterbacks were good. So offensive line is definitely something you can say is probably one of the question marks. But how about running back? Like, who's the guy toting the mail? And I would argue last year was Maffa was not a bad Maffa. Like, early on in his career, I was like, that's a bad Maffa. And last year, and I know he was dinged up, but he was not downhill. He was not breaking tackles. It left a lot to be desired. And they've got to find a way to have the running game. It can't be Klubnik all the time. It's got to be outside of Cade. So, how did I do hitting your spots?
The running back is the other question. But my primary question, I think it gets helped by the coaching change. But also, is their defense, like, yes, they're talented, and yes, you see preseason draft boards. 33 to Louisville, 38 to Texas, 34 to Georgia, 31 to SMU. NC State and Virginia got over 30 against them.
Okay, stop.
Louisville and Texas ran all over them.
When you watched them last year, Was it talent to you that was the reason why they were giving up points?
So that's why I just made the prereq. How much does the coaching lift?
Answer my question
gave up
first.
One, two, did you see games over 30?
Did you see it was? Did you think it was coaching or did you think it was players?
A little bit of both.
Okay, because Sammy Brown
in the secondary
is a bad mother. Shut your mouth, like bad boy. We've talked about the defensive lineman with Parker and Woods, like Freaky Friday, first round draft picks, first round cornerback in the back end, like experience with KB at safety. Like this defense is going to be on a different level. Like they're not going to be doing that consistently and they're going to score. So I just say for me watching them a year ago, I thought it was a lot of they needed to be a little bit more dialed in. They needed to play a little bit harder. They need to be put in a little bit better spots at times. I just didn't think it was – I thought they were a step slow and they were giving up things. And listen, Dabo doesn't do a lot of firing. Like, that's not Dabo's MO. And he's very big at, you know, promoting –
it's a change. It's for a reason.
Yes, but they had to do something because the defensive side of the ball was a disaster – and you had way too much talent for that to be a problem. Like that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah. So if that gets fixed, hey, through the roof, and then it's hashtag all in. So by the way, before we get to the interview, I got to tell everybody out in the sort of social media and anybody in the Athens area that happens to see you out tomorrow, make sure they wish you happy birthday tomorrow.
Appreciate
you
that.
Old cat that you are. I still got you by a year, but.
Baby doll said to me in the car, she was like, do you feel like you're getting like, are you getting like an old man yet? And I was like, not even close. I said, I feel great. So feel good. Not worried about it too much. Hey, what do we got people turning in to, or tuning in from, man?
I saw some Swanee, some Tallahassee. Swanee. That's where I hang out for work. So I know that area well.
Yeah, in Tallahassee, we were asking for nicknames in the feed. They have a bunch of different nicknames in Tallahassee. I've heard Tallatrashy, Tallanasty. I like Tallahassee personally. Like it's a cool spot. By the way, one of the most intriguing college football teams this year. Like I know they're not going to win two games. I got no clue what they're going to be though. Like I have no gauge of where they're at now. Like it's amazing. A couple years ago, you're like, this program's about to ascend and take off. And now you're like, I don't know what they're going to be. Gus Malzahn comes in, new quarterback, Thomas Castellanos will be freaking fantastic and dynamic and a playmaker. But I guess we'll get to our boy, Pete Thamel now, Brent. Appreciate it. Nice show as always. We'll let Pete take you home. We just got to catch up with Pete. I got to catch up with him earlier today and just discuss the ever-changing landscape of college football and getting Pete to kind of loosen up a little bit, like talk about some stories, to talk about some family. And it's Pete's a great dude, but peep this. Super excited to talk to this next guy, Pete Thamel. Got to work with him on College Game Day. He still works there. He's basically the insider. It's insider trading. It's illegal at any other company, but Pete knows – everything about everything. He's the most connected guy that I think I've ever met in college football.
Don't talk.
It was great to work with you, Pete, too. And I want to know this, man. Like, I want to know, how did Pete Thamel become Pete Thamel? Like, how did you go, I'm going to be an investigative detective in the sport of in this college football? Like, how did you get started in this?
So this may surprise you, David, because we worked with each other for such a long time, but I do not cut the profile of an elite athlete. So those dreams are dashed very, very quickly.
I mean, you're only lacking a few parts of it. You know, the height, the speed, the agility, the I mean, just a few parts.
Pretty much all of it. Yeah, pretty much all of it. So that recognition came quickly that I would not be going to Notre Dame to be a Will linebacker. So you know, I did grow up. I grew up in Massachusetts and grew up loving sports. My dad was high school principal at the local school in my town. So I was, you know, grew up going to games, going to football games, basketball games, all that kind of stuff. and, you know, had an affinity for sports and read a lot. You know, I was a nerd growing up, read a lot of books, read a lot of newspapers, you know, did all that kind of stuff. So went to college. And by the time I got there, I kind of knew what I wanted to do, which I think was fortunate because I went to Syracuse, where every other jerk at ESPN went. Right. And it really is a great launching pad. And I'm not going to go through all the people who've gone to Syracuse and gone on to our profession and done a really good job.
A lot. So
it is a long and distinguished list. And what that does is it gives you a very clear pathway to say, hey, I can do this. I can go do this. So I walked into the school paper my first day there, worked there for 4 years, was very lucky there. There's a lot of luck involved in this story, I can assure you. But, you know, Don McNabb was the quarterback. So the first game that I ever went to at Syracuse was his first start. And then he had 4 years of really, really good football. So for being a Northeast kid who didn't really grow up in the heartbeat of SEC football like you did, David, it was a good exposure to that. So by the time I went and covered the team, I covered the Orange Bowl. They were playing Miami, some of those great teams from the U, and they even ran them in 98. And I covered the Fiesta Bowl. They played a Bill Snyder team. So I just got all these great touches to the sport. They opened in the Kickoff Classic 1 year against Ron Dayne in Wisconsin, right? So I'm in all these press boxes. I'm at all these great games. I'm seeing all these things and you know, developing an affinity for college football. At the same time in the winter, obviously, college basketball at Syracuse in that time and many times is obviously one of the heartbeats.
Always good.
Yeah, it's just they were consistently excellent under Jim Boeheim for a very long time. And that was old Big East days. You had St. John's coming in, you know, Villanova, Georgetown rivalry was rock and roll. So anyway, like, how couldn't you, like, develop an affinity for kind of this crazy world of college sports? I grew up, you know, very much a pro sports fan. So, yeah, I got hired at the local paper in Syracuse after my graduation, made $29,000 a year, and was
loaded
football and doing a little bit of everything, and then just kind of built it from there. And I think from 1999 until now, what I would say is just, like, you got to show up, man. You got to go. You got to, you know, I'm flying to a campus tomorrow morning. You always just have to go see people. College sports changes pretty exponentially, right? Like when you walk in the Georgia building, what is the equipment guy the same? When you walk in the Georgia building, how many people are the same from when you?
Oh, they change.
Yeah.
A lot.
And it probably changed like 3 years out, right? And it's going to go and go and go. Usually it's the SIDs, and even he retired, God bless Claude. And the EQ guys, right, they're usually there for a while. And then after that, like, there's not a lot. So college sports is this just wildly, rapidly changing landscape, and you have to go relearn it and re-know it and re-ingratiate yourself in it. And so I got fired by the New York Times in 2004 to cover national colleges. So this would be my 22nd year doing it. And, you know, just a lot of, you know, been to all 50 states, it was every Power Five campus except Washington State, but I don't know if we're going to count them as that anymore. But yeah, you know, like you have, David, calling games all those years and going to game day all those years, been to all the places, you know, been lucky enough to meet all the folks, and then you just kind of build and grow.
Yeah, well, you do a good job with that. Now, you say the ever-changing landscape of college football, like, you've been on this realignment stuff. Like, talk about the realignment piece that's coming, because I think some people are like, crap, man, like, we've done this so many times, it's hard to keep up. So now what's going on with it?
Yeah, so I would say this major conference realignment, like, that would rock college football, like we saw with the USC-UCLA move, for example, a couple of years ago, and then the ripple with Washington and Oregon and the Texas-Oklahoma. Those are like the two in the last decade that have been major. I don't think we'll see any of that, David, for you know, about 5 years, right? We're bracing
5 minutes and 50 seconds. Yeah, we won't see that for forever.
Yes, but I do think that the ripples of those bigger moves are still being felt. So we have the rebuilt Pac-12. And look, deadlines spur actions, right? You know that. I know that. We all have deadlines, and they make us do things. And the rebuilt Pac-12 right now has 8 members, 7 full-time football members, and they need to get 8 full-time football members to be an FBS league. And they need to do that by 2026, which means they need to add somebody fairly soon. They've long targeted Texas State as the school from the Sun Belt, San Marcos, Texas, right south of Austin. There's sort of there's mutual interest there, and that will seemingly happen before Texas State buyout doubles after July 1st. So I would think we get a ripple there. The Pac-12 becomes a league, and then it can maybe strategically build and pluck a few more brands from there. But they need to get whole first, and that's the kind of the move that needs to be made. And then from there, if your listeners are in the weeds, the Sun Belt would have to likely add a team. They'd go from 14 to 13. Louisiana Tech is the favorite, and we know that because in the fall, Texas State was close going to Mountain West, and they all kind of huddled and thought, okay, we'll probably add Louisiana Tech from there. And then if Louisiana Tech leaves Conference USA, the favorite to fill that spot as they'd go from 11 to 10 would be Tarleton State. So every action has an opposite reaction, David, and that's the way this looks like it could play out in the upcoming weeks here. And as I know about realignment, it usually happens right around the 4th of July when I'm trying to not work.
When you're trying to get some time off. So all of that stuff, man, like makes my head hurt. I played defense for a reason, but like, what about the conversation around the house settlement? Like,
sure.
You know, college football changing and obviously new rules coming in. Like, what are the coaches talking about? Is this a positive thing, or how are all the coaches responding? Because when I say Pete talks to every coach, like he talks to everybody in college football.
Yeah, so I think the best way to look at the house settlement, it doesn't actually settle anything. It sort of restarts a new path. And in theory, there's a lot of very good things on that new path. There is direct payment of schools. If you were still at Georgia, David, you would get a check from Georgia and you would have a salary slot at Georgia. Say you're going into your senior year, you would be slotted as an All-American starting defensive lineman. You would probably make seven figures considering your production and what you had done. So I do think that's been expected for a while, but I think that gets lost a little bit because look, like the notion of Georgia paying you when you were there would have been like blown your mind, right?
Well, legally, yes.
No, legally
getting paid. Yes. Yeah.
Well, we don't know about the other stuff. Yes, the notion of like the athletic department cutting you a check, right? Like yeah. Paying that way is still like pretty like, whoa, it goes counter to amateurism, college, like all these things that have been hammered in our heads, right or wrong, for all these years. So that's the first part of this, is that there's going to be $20.5 million at essentially every major campus to share with athletes. And that is, in my opinion, extremely positive, David. I think that's a very good thing this pie that grew and grew and grew and grew with conference TV networks, billion-dollar TV deals, and a playoff now that we'll talk about later, but is going to continue to grow. That a stream of that, and a pretty significant stream, right, is going to go to the people playing the games, the athletes performing. And I'm, you know,
Pete, real quick. Yeah. That's so important because what people don't understand is, like, can you imagine Pete playing a game or coaching a game and you're building your whole schedule around everything you do, but you don't know the rules?
Yeah.
Like, that's the dumbest, like, nobody would play. Nobody would be like, you know what? Sign me up for that. I don't know the rules. I don't know how we're all doing this, but that's kind of how it's been for a while now in this sport.
It's been a really awkward sideways time, and there's been a lot of coach complaining. I think now where it is, it's like we're reset on this path, David, and there's a lot of unknown. Quite frankly, there's a lot of cynicism whether the rules will be able to be enforced. So the $20.5 million is actually pretty simple, right? You cut it up, you get a salary cap, everybody's brought in a guy from the NFL to say, okay, the backup linebacker makes this, the starting tailback makes this. You know, that's all kind of settled. People are prepared for that. Where the tension points are going to switch to, David, is how does outside NIL get adjudicated? How does outside NIL? So all these schools built these powerful collectives that have leveraged the brands and, you know, their marketing firms. They brought in advertisers. They brought in, you know, the local car dealership, some of the similar college stuff. Yeah. And then the top five players in the sport. Remember, like Bryce Young had Cash App, right? Like, so if you are a player who cuts through in college football, you could go get a big national Gatorade commercial or, you know, who did it? DJ, I think, and DJ Uiagalelei and Caleb did Dr. Pepper, right? So there's like that level for the highest guys. But then locally, can the car dealership pay the star running back $500,000? Like, is that, and that's, it, it's going to be, they were calling it fair market value, and they've sort of gone away from that. Yeah, they've gone away from that term a little bit.
Define my market.
Now it's range of compensation is the term.
New so, problems.
Yes,
new things there will be about.
You don't start a whole new system and put in rules and such without issues. Now, they've actually started. So the NCAA, obviously, generally an unpopular organization, has been for a long time. I know you've been critical of them. Everybody's been critical of them on game day and beyond. Like, it's, you know, it's hard to find like a guy, you know, folks in our space who are, you know, positive of the NCAA. I will say this, David, I think one of the smartest things I've seen them do in my two decades doing this is getting rid of enforcement. So there's an outside entity now that is going to adjudicate all this stuff. It's called the College Sports Commission. The settlement passed, and then this commission went in place, you know, immediately, basically. And they hired a seven-figure job to come in to basically build this structure on how to do all this. Now, look, competent people, there's always been competent people, smart people, well-meaning people. They've just have failed to wrap their arms around it. Now, this guy has a new challenge and a fresh sheet. But there are going to be issues. It is not going to be seamless. Coaches are already looking down the road, seeing issues. Hey, they're doing it this way. They're promising guys stuff up front. You can't do, you know, there will always be finger pointing. And I think that the tension there is this, David, like the brands that have had advantages over the years, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Penn State, Alabama, Texas, USC, whatever, you know who they are. And I'm not picking or excluding anyone for any reason, like the big thumper brands have always had built-in advantages. It used to be when you were getting recruited, I'm sure it was stadium size and weight room size, right? And then it's, you know, shifted as the NIL era has come and they've been able to leverage those brands. Do those brands really want to give up their advantage? Like if at its core, college football doesn't want to be the NFL. They don't want Baylor to have the same salary cap as Alabama. And they don't want Wake Forest to have the same amount to spend as LSU, right? Then I'm just using like, you know, just random arbitrary Big 12 ACC versus your Big 10, Ohio State and, you know, Syracuse, whatever it is, right? Fill in the blank. Like at the core, the people who run the sport, have the power in the sport, don't want everybody to have 20.5 million and it's this big slog like the NFL where people go up and down in like little variances. The big brands, the thumper places want to continue to leverage those big brands, leverage their income, leverage their popularity to have the best players.
All right, so let me ask you this, Pete. Hold on. Yeah. Let me stop you real quick.
Yeah, go.
Now, not everybody's salary cap will be the same because that $24.5 million is for the athletic department.
Correct.
The school decides what they want to allocate for football, basketball, et cetera, correct?
Yes. So, for example, Georgia, who we keep using because I'm looking at you here,
80-15-5.
What was that?
It's 80-15-5.
Yes. And so I was just going to say, generally, they're going to give a higher percentage to football over basketball than Kentucky, right? You know, same as Arizona,
Kansas.
You know, yeah. Like, yeah. So like the basketball focused schools are going to give a bigger swath to basketball. And so where it becomes interesting, like one of the interesting hypotheticals here is take Florida in basketball. They just won the national championship, right? They're running hard. They've got a huge roster this year. They spent a ton of money. When these rules all come to settle for next year, is Marquette, St. John's, and Villanova going to have double or triple the basketball roster available money, you know, from the school, then these places. So then we go in the margins. Is Florida really going to just like lose players to Georgetown because they don't have that cap space? Like, so that's hard to imagine that honestly, the leadership of the sport letting that happen. So those are some of the places where I really think there's, you know, there's going to be some pressure points.
What does the NCAA do now? You gave them a compliment, by the way, which I appreciate because they basically, I like the way you said it. You basically said like, hey, they did something good. They basically took themselves out of the equation. Great job. Like you did a good job by removing what you were supposed to do. Yeah. So I find that interesting.
I mean, they failed at it for
miserably. Yeah. So what do they do now? What is the NCAA's role in sport?
Sure. So they run championships. I would say they do a good job with that, right? NCAA tournament, Final Four. And now we're in that kind of the season of Omaha, College World Series and softball. Like that is one of their main tasks. And I would argue they do that well. Now there's a lot of like every sports organization needs infrastructure, right? So they're going to do the academic stuff, compliance stuff, eligibility stuff, rulemaking, fairness of the game. So for example, they would not take NC State NIL case, because that's going to go to the College Sports Commission and Brian Seely. They would still do the Connor Stallions case because that's a fairness issue, a fair play issue. That's not, there was no like illegal, you know, bag of money dropped. That was, they were breaking NCAA rules when it comes to the game. So there will be places they pop up, but they basically outsourced their least popular, least effective, you know, shop.
What a great job of business. Like, to be able to retain all of this income, but I'm just going to outsource some of this. It's really good job. All right. So, Pete, all of the decisions that are made in college football, whether we expand, whether we – all the things that are going to continue to happen. Like, the SEC and the Big Ten basically have all the power, correct? Like, they after this season, they are the two majority shares, and they're going to make the decisions that affect college football. What is that going to look like for everybody?
Yeah, so I think the first place we're going to see that is the playoff here, David. And I think it's going to take still six more months or so for the CFP to make a decision on what's next. I expect it to be 16 from talking to sources as this stuff has percolated. And I would expect it to be the 5-11 model going forward. That there was kind of a pivot at SEC meetings towards that. And there's strong support from the ACC and the Big 12. You know, for the Big Ten to get there, we're going to have to see the SEC go to 9 conference games. I'm sure since you were a player, people were talking about a 9 conference games in the SEC. I think we finally see that happen. The ACC would go to 9 conference games as well. And then also, and I think this is critical because this is when, and you've been on all these shows and analyzed and talked about this for years, when in November we're sitting there analyzing resumes and say who's going to be in, who's going to be out, how strength of schedule is factored into that. So they're meeting right now this week that we're talking in Asheville, North Carolina. There's some CFP meetings, commissioner meetings, and they're really drilling down on the role of strength of schedule and how wins and losses will be weighted. So a win over Louisiana Monroe doesn't get weighted the same as that. Like, it's not just the number on the left side of the column and the number of losses. The losses, if they're losses to, you know, LSU, Tennessee, and whoever, are going to not be as punitive because of the quality of them. So I think they're basically going to acknowledge that the big thumper leagues, you're playing more difficult games, and those losses are going to be contextualized some. So how they do that, the math to do it all, that is boundlessly complex. I'm not a hardcore numbers guy, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know the magic mathematical formula. The one thing I've learned over the years, I guarantee it will be controversial once you're starting to put teams and logos on each other and coaches lobbying.
The thing you need to know is
it won't be
like, because Pete, we had a magical system that did numbers that picked it, and we were pissed.
Yes.
Then we decided to go a different direction. We're going to be it's impossible to measure, like. Because here's the thing, what I deem important for strength of schedule versus what you deem important is it might be different, and that's okay. And that's why you need multiple voices. Well, where does the College Football Playoff Committee come into this equation then? Like, what decision making are they going to be doing in the future? Because if you're giving more automatic qualifiers, like, there's less work for them to do. What is their responsibilities going to lead to?
Yeah, David. So if it's the 5-11 model, which is, I think, the current expectation, a lot of road to plow still, but that's current expectation, the committee would pick the 11. Now, look, 8 of the 11 are going to be pretty obvious, right? Like, you know, there won't be. But then when you get to that cluster of the last 3 and then the next 3, that's where the tension point comes. I think some of the, like, redefining and further defining straight the schedule and the rule, wins, losses, is going to try to take some of the power out of the committee's hands. Like, the commissioners have been pretty blunt, and some of the SEC ADs have said this pretty bluntly, that they don't trust the committee, basically. So, yeah, it's what's old is new again, right? We didn't trust the numbers. We brought in people. We don't trust the people. We're bringing in numbers. Like, it's just, yeah, it's in round and round and round we go, right? So I think they're going to try to meet in the middle there, where things are better contextualized in terms of the wins and the losses and the quality of wins and losses, you know, et cetera, to try to put the committee in position to make better decisions.
Such a hard thing. Such a hard thing to do. All right. A couple more questions for you, and I'll let you get out of here, because I'm sure you got a story to break. What's the most intriguing storyline this year to you? Like, the storyline that you're you're going to focus on and that you think is going to be really fun to watch next season?
So I'm excited about the Can Penn State breakthrough story, right? They are a top five program that wants and needs to get to one or two, right? Like they just haven't, they've been consistently excellent, but just short of elite. And I feel like roster wise, O-line wise, you and I always used to talk about O-lines a lot. You'd watch the film. I'd talk to the scouts. I think Penn State has one of the best O-lines in the country. It starts there. I think Drew Aller is a top 10 NFL draft pick. They have the best tailback tandem in the country. They don't have good receiver play. They've brought in some portal guys to try to upgrade that, but that's been a consistent nag of that program. So, and then James Franklin, Hall of Fame resume, but the big games, you know, he's come up consistently short. So can Penn State, David, be that team that breaks through, finally wins the big ones, goes deep in the playoff? Obviously, you know, look, they were a Drew Aller interception away from going to overtime to play for the national title last year. So, like, they have been right at the doorstep. And you've obviously done this a long time like I have. Usually the teams that are consistently excellent and get to the doorstep break through at some point. And this feels like the roster and the moment for them. They obviously paying Jim Knowles, you know, highest coordinator salary. And, they are locked and loaded for this. And, you know, the sub story there is, how do you handle that, right? If you're at a place that's just come up short, that's probably the most pressurized program for high-end performance this year. How do they handle it? How do they go? I'm very bullish on Penn State. I think they've got the best roster in the Big Ten. I think they are a national championship-type team. They also, I think this is important, David, if you look at Michigan 2 years ago and Ohio State last year, both of them opened with three cupcakes. So you have a month to really get your team refined. Clemson and LSU, they're going to get punched in the face the first series, right?
Ohio State, Texas.
They're going to get punched in the face the first series. If you have a veteran team, you can go forge your identity. You can try some different things. You can make some mistakes early. Nobody's going to notice because it's going to be 50-something to a single digit on the other side. And then you can come out in late September when league play starts and really have a refined identity. And I think that's been a subtle thing that was probably not talked about a lot on the last two national champions is they had a month to find themselves before they were going to be challenged. Yeah.
And I think it sets up well
for Penn State that way.
I think the best OC-DC combination last year was Ohio State to be able to have Chip Kelly and Jim Knowles. I'm not sure it's going to get any better to me than Koltunecki and Knowles. So now James Franklin has the coach on each side of the football. Yes. He's done the recruiting thing. Now he's just got a lead, you know, and he's got the players and experience. So I'm with you. Everything's back. All right. Last question, Pete. Mm-hmm. And this is not on a script. So I'm gonna have to get you to, you know, I'm gonna see what you got with this, brother.
All right, let's go.
I want to know a Pete Thamel story of like something was breaking. You're in an inconvenient spot and you got to go do something weird. Like you did something that was different, or you didn't have the suit. You didn't have the tie. Like you were just, you're putting this together with like shoestring and duct tape.
Oh man. There's a lot of them because news never breaks at convenient times. I missed the Easter egg hunt. That was a week before Easter when the Nico story broke. When Tennessee and him parted ways, that was a Saturday morning. My wife looked at me and I was like, I'll meet you at the hunt. We got to tackle this.
Does she just roll her eyes at this point? Like, yeah. How does that handle?
She says, oh, this is the biggest story of the year again for the ninth. I'll tell you this one. It was 4th of July, my first year at ESPN. We're in our condo. I'm packing the car, right? Condo building garage, bringing the suitcases in. I get a text about USC and UCLA. And I go up to my office and I'm like, you know, just like slammed on TV, you know, like it just going, writing. And then I walk out of the office. We're obviously not going to take the drive to Cape Cod that day. I think it was a Thursday and we were trying to beat the traffic, right? And we're going to leave midday. Teddy's a little guy, so we wanted to like time it right. It's like a 70-mile drive, but if it goes sideways, it can take 3 hours, right? And I walk out of my office at like 7 and I was like, I didn't close the trunk. I got to go back to the car. I just left it. I just left the trunk open.
That's kind of necessity.
That was one that was.
What if baby doll was like, where's all our stuff?
Yeah, like, no. So I was like, we're going to go tomorrow. And I don't even think we went tomorrow because that was a bit of a whiplash one. So yeah, when Ted was born, it took a couple of days. So I'm sitting there in the hospital room, you know, somebody's always hiring an AD. I'm embarrassed the places where I've been, where, you know, you pull over on the side of the highway. Yeah. Just kind of happens. My joke, David, is chaos is job security. And if there's one thing college athletics does not lack, it's chaos.
Especially the last couple of years. There's no doubt about that. But, all right, my man, appreciate you. Like always, always good to talk to you. Appreciate your time.
Yeah. David, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate you, my friend.
See you, dude.